From crowds supporting Israel in downtown Raleigh to an emotional protest between students at UNC Chapel Hill, WRAL has live team coverage on the demonstrations happening today over the Israel-Hamas war.
As the war between Israelis and Palestinians rages on, what role, if any, will troops from Fort Liberty play? A former Fort Bragg commander offers his perspective.
We're live on the Midway, showing you everything new and exciting as it's opening day here for the North Carolina State Fair.
If you're swinging by the State Fair this weekend, bring a rain jacket. Futurecast timing of the wet weather when it moves in and out.
The war in the Middle East is intensifying at this hour. Israel launching new airstrikes today in Gaza in retaliation for the Hamas militant group's brutal attack Saturday. Right now, more than 2,500 people have been killed on both sides, including 27 Americans. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. Triangle groups are coming together in response to this devastating conflict. Multiple demonstrations held throughout the day today. We have team coverage tonight as we track these developments and reaction from across the world and here at home. We want to begin with Mark Boyle in the WRAL Live Center. Mark.
The death toll in this war continues to go up, Dan. We've been talking about that all afternoon. Let's bring up this graphic in this next screen right here to show you where things stand here at 7 o'clock. So right now, the total number of Americans that have been killed, died in Israel, is holding at 27. 12 United Nations relief workers have been killed in Gaza as the attacks and the strikes continue. France has banned all pro-Palestinian protests. They say that they create violence. They're having some conflict there this evening. In totality, on both sides, 2,500 people have died as of right now. We'll keep you up to date as this story continues to develop in the Live Center. Back to you.
Okay, Mark, thank you. More than 100 people gathered in downtown Raleigh to show their support for Israel. WRAL's Carly Haynes is there joining us live now. Carly, this event, we can hear them behind you. It's underway right now.
You can. Yeah, there are still quite a few people behind me right now, even as this event is coming to a close. And at one point, we did see more than 100 people at this rally. It was just growing throughout the afternoon. We heard a lot of chanting, and people were holding blue flyers with prayers for Israeli soldiers and hostages. They also had a moment of silence just a few minutes ago. And this was hosted by the North Carolina Coalition for Israel, but also co-organized by different grassroots organizations. They're calling it an emergency rally. They're wearing shirts that say, "We stand with Israel." They're waving the Israeli flag. We've also seen several people honking, as you might have heard, as they drive by this rally. We were going around and speaking to the people here who were sharing their stories with us. Many of the people here tell us they have family in Israel.
When people ask if I have any family in Israel, I answer, I have 7 million brothers and sisters there. That's how we can be very divided within our community, but at the end of the day, we are one.
And the other thing that I do want to mention is the security and the police officer presence that we've seen here. We've seen quite a few Raleigh police officers here. They're either in their cruisers or set up all around the crowd. The organizers here did tell people, if you're under the age of 20, don't come here for safety reasons. But I can tell you, we didn't see any violence, nor have we seen any counter-protesters here today. Back to you.
Okay, Carly Haynes live in downtown Raleigh. Thank you. Earlier today, opposing groups confronted each other at a rally on UNC's campus. Tensions were high as dueling demonstrations led to anger, shouting, and in some cases, physical confrontations. An event branded as a pro-Palestinian day of resistance began peacefully with an estimated 1,000 people in attendance. The scene became chaotic, though, as two sides fought back and forth. UNC had additional officers there, but no one was arrested.
Tomorrow, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin will visit Israel to show support and discuss military aid. Austin has ties to our military here, previously serving at Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. WRL Fayetteville reporter Gilbert Bay spoke with another former Fort Liberty commander, General Dan McNeil, about local troops and the history of being called into battle. It's an interview you'll only see on WRAL.
Well, the name of the sign may have changed from Fort Bragg to Fort Liberty, but what hasn't changed is the fact that the soldiers who were stationed here are trained to deploy and fight anywhere in the world within a moment's notice.
This is what soldiers at Fort Liberty train to do every day. When the American Embassy came under attack in Iraq in 2019, members of the 82nd Airborne Division were rapidly deployed on New Year's Eve. General Dan McNeil commanded troops at Fort Liberty when it was Fort Bragg. He says current commanders aren't sitting on their hands, wondering if they're going to get a call to assist in the war between Israel and Hamas. The decision to get American forces involved in the conflict in Israel may center around freeing American hostages that are being held by Hamas.
No secret that there are some units capable of hostage rescue at Fort Liberty. It's also no secret that the greater number of forces at Fort Bragg are well trained in non-combatant evacuation.
However, McNeil stresses the decision to use those units will not be made by the command at Fort Liberty. He says those orders will come directly from the president through the Pentagon.
Now, once again, we haven't gotten any word that soldiers from Fort Liberty are going to be deploying anywhere. But as General McNeil said, if they get that call, they will be ready to go. At Fort Liberty, Gilbert Bays, WREL News.
And in just a few minutes, we're going to take a closer look at Gaza, its history and its role in this war as we go in depth.
To other news now, a company in RTP is developing AI technology to help stop retail thefts that lead to losses for stores and ultimately costs of all of us in the form of higher prices. Toshiba Global Commerce works with six of the nation's largest retailers, including Walgreens and CVS. It says theft is the number one issue they're hearing from retailers right now. Its new AI technology identifies products placed on a checkout scanner, while another camera above uses AI to catch potential theft. This technology can also speed up the time you spend at checkout. Here we go. It is the first night of the North Carolina State Fair. Look at it. It's all lit up. Everybody's out enjoying their time. And what a night to be outside and enjoying the fresh air now that that rain left us. We have live team coverage from the fairgrounds. Let's begin with meteorologist Mike Mays with how the next few days are shaping up for families looking to go. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Ashley, the first day of the North Carolina State Fair, in my opinion, has been a success. We had that rain this morning. It moved out this afternoon. We've got nothing but clear sky. The lights in the midway are shining and a lot of folks coming and going. And we got great food as well. If you still want to head out this evening, let's check out that forecast. Starting to cool down. We had a high of 77 today. We should be in the 60s as we head through the evening by 11 o'clock tonight. Expect about 62. Now, we had that rain this morning, but it didn't dampen the opening of the State Fair. But we have one bump in the road and you see it in the next 3 days. Tomorrow will be a warm one, 80. And so if you come out in the afternoon, wear shorts, but have a jacket in the evening. Saturday, showers, possible thunderstorms, and I think the storm's possible in the afternoon, 73. It's with a cold front. And once that front passes, it'll be cooler, breezy, less humid on Sunday, mostly cloudy, 68. So if you are coming to the State Fair in the next few days, Saturday, watch out for rain. Kat will have more about that and full weather coming up in less than 15 minutes. Now, my colleague Aaron Thomas, in search of one of the coolest rides, is standing by to show you what you can expect if you come out of the State Fair.
Yeah, so listen, Mike, we are currently on the double-decker carousel. It's one of four new rides. We've heard all the hype, so we had to get on here and see what all the hype was about. I have Liz here beside me. You're from Raleigh, right? Yes. So she recognized us. She watches WREL. That's why she decided to sit beside us. We're waiting for things to kick up just a little bit, but let's show you some of the crowds from this evening. Obviously, it's the opening night. It's a lot of excitement. We did hear from some people who were saying they had a few hiccups trying to get their tickets, you know, the prepaid tickets, and they had some long lines, but that didn't seem to work itself out. When you're talking about the North Carolina State Fair, I mean, for a lot of families, it's about tradition, going on your favorite ride or getting your favorite food. Others, they want to try new things, like the new rides or the new foods, the more than 30 foods. As she spoke with one young lady visiting from Moorhead City, as she shares what she's looking forward to here on opening night.
Food, rides, yep. And the games, obviously. So I'm here to enjoy myself, you know?
Yeah, we're here to enjoy ourselves too. I mean, we just want to get these this horse here fired up. We've already been on two spins. I really want to show our viewers what's in store, but so far it's great to see the lights turned on. Liz, I think you're ready to get this party started, right? So obviously it's shaping up to be a big weekend here. You have the State Fair, and then you also have some concerts. So on our late news, we're going to get 10 on Fox 50. We're going to talk about how to help prepare our viewers or anyone coming to the State Fair for any particular traffic issues. But for now, we need to fire this horse up so we can enjoy ourselves.
Giddy up. Giddy up, Aaron and Liz, with a dynamic duo
those
out there.
Those two are having so much fun out there.
Hang out with Liz.
Oh, man. Yeah, we got to get that carousel going. My daughter calls it carousel.
Get the carousel.
She loves it. Yeah.
All right. And you know what? Liz or anybody else, come hang out with us. All right. We're going to be down there at the fair. You can meet all the people that you see here on WRL News right on the northeast side of Dorton Arena facing Restaurant Row. Jeff and Renee, they're going to be out there Friday, tomorrow morning, 10:30 to 11:30. Then Lena and me will be out there as well. You can find the full list on WRL.com. Just search fair.
All that food looked really good, that cupcake.
I know.
I'll be diving into one
of those. Let's go. Yeah. I'm ready.
Still ahead, the average American consumes about a credit card's worth of plastic each week.
Whoa.
That's why some groups are on a mission to find a solution to the problem.
Plus, as we continue our coverage on the Israel-Hamas conflict, we'll go in-depth on Gaza, its history, and its role in this war. So, you know, last night we really got a lot of great responses from all of you at home after our in-depth discussion about religious aspects in this conflict between Israel and Palestine. We mentioned the significance of this holy land to the three of the world's most powerful and influential religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. Now, apparently I didn't fall on my face discussing this last night, one of the world's most delicate topics. And after seeing all of your emails to Dan at WRL.com last night, my managers asked me to spend tonight on Gaza. That is the stretch of land in Israel controlled by Hamas and currently under siege by the Israeli government. Right now, Israeli forces have closed all of its borders, land and sea, and they've cut off the flow of food, water, electricity, and fuel. Now, for some perspective about that area, Gaza is 141 square miles, which is roughly the same geographical size as Raleigh, with nearly five times the population, 2.3 million people who live mostly in poverty, about half of whom are children. According to the UN, roughly 80% of people there must rely on international aid just to survive. Now, the UN doesn't recognize Gaza as a country, but in some ways it does operate as one. It's existed in some form since the 40s, but since 2007 it's been controlled by Hamas. This is a group founded by Palestinian refugees in the late 80s that has vowed to annihilate Israel and reclaim the entire region for Palestine. The Israeli military reacted by enforcing a blockade around the border and tightening its grip and control over Gaza. But nothing has compared to what we're witnessing now. That said, this violence now is only the latest chapter in a complicated saga, a story that can truly be traced back thousands of years. But to discuss Gaza specifically, we can go back to just after World War II, when many Jewish people were calling for their own nation, and the UN decreed new borders in that region. They gave half of the land to Palestine and half to Israel, with Jerusalem as an international zone. This is what it looked like, a Jewish state in green there and the Arab state in orange. But the Palestinians didn't like this, and neither did any of the neighboring Arab nations. So they all declared war, which Israel then won, along with even more land, including Gaza. Professor Bruce Gentleson from Duke explains what happened in that area next.
Gaza was a refugee camp going back to the 1940s, to what you talked about, you know, after the creation of the two states, which never happened. Gaza was, you know, was full of refugees.
And it stayed that way for decades under Israeli control through countless conflicts and some moments of progress. But throughout, the prospect of peaceful independence has appeared out of reach, especially since Hamas.
And the population size, because the refugee camps were so big and there was nowhere else for them to go. For a while, they could come work in Israel, but they'd have to go back. And then as concerns about terrorism increased, the entry of workers got less and less and less.
And now, as we speak, everyone there is trapped in war. in a humanitarian crisis with an uncertain conclusion. Now, I realize the history is much more complex and nuanced than this. I just wanted to give you a little bit of context tonight, kind of a starting point, something to stoke your curiosity a bit on knowing more about this topic. As with anything we do in depth, I always want people at home to do their own research. Be curious, get invested in these topics, read different articles, watch different videos, learn from different journalists, follow different people, and as always, let me know what you are thinking on this topic or any other. Email me at dan@wral.com. Tell me what's on your mind, and we'll go in depth.
Context really is everything, Dan. Plastic is everywhere, and when tiny pieces break off, called microplastics, they end up in our oceans, in our food, in our drinking water. Even in the air we breathe, studies estimate the average American consumes about a credit card's worth of plastic each week. That's equivalent to 50 plastic bags each year. WRAL climate change reporter Liz McLaughlin dives deeper into the problem and the solutions being developed in our own backyard.
In a basement lab at NC State.
I'm really passionate about this.
Researchers have their eyes on a solution to the pervasive plastic problem.
And my lab focuses on engineering microbes to do interesting things.
In this case, eating microplastics.
As synthetic materials, they can be very slow to degrade. And we thought biology might give us an interesting solution to that biodegradability problem.
Professor Nathan Crook and PhD student Tianyu Li successfully engineered a marine bacteria to break down plastic 10 times faster than if it decomposed in nature.
And so we're throwing the whole kitchen sink at this problem.
The enzymes specifically break down PET, a common type of plastic found in water bottles, food containers, and even polyester clothing.
This is definitely a first step trying to solve the plastic pollution problem. But meanwhile, we still need a lot of other methods to reduce the plastic waste from the beginning.
Dylan Baxter is working to do just that with his company, Plant Switch.
So our mission is to turn plants into plastic.
Hitting the name on the nose by taking over a former plastic manufacturing facility in Sanford, using rice husks as a replacement for the petroleum used to make plastic, and giving new life to the 150 million tons of agricultural waste that gets thrown away each year.
That's at the core of our technology, is utilizing these waste streams while also helping solve their waste problem and then using it to solve another waste problem.
The bio-based resin can go into manufacturing equipment already used to make plastic, making it easy and cheap for manufacturers to make the plant switch.
It's really important that these companies don't have to pay five times as much to do something eco-friendly.
Progress towards stopping microplastic pollution at the source as scientists aim to clean up what's already in the environment. Liz McLaughlin, WRAL News.
It's so unsettling to imagine that much plastic.
Yeah, I know.
Going into our bodies.
Something's got to be done about that. Can we turn our attention back to the fair?
This is nice.
And I do want to let you know that Aaron Thomas's carousel did eventually go.
Thank goodness. He was starting to get a little
impatient
there.
He would be very grouchy. All right, meteorologist Kat Campbell taking a different angle of that. Oh, yeah, there we go.
There
we can see it.
The carousel, we finally saw it spinning on this camera shot. We were happy for Aaron, rooting him and his buddy Liz on. 70 degrees right now out at the North Carolina State Fair. The sunsets are getting earlier now before 6:45. 6:44 was the sunset tonight. If you're headed to the fair tomorrow, first thing when you wake up tomorrow morning, you may run into patchy fog. But the rest of the day looks great. Sunny, 74 at lunchtime, 80 degrees the high tomorrow afternoon. It'll be nice and warm. Dinner time temperatures in the mid-70s. But we do have rain in the forecast Saturday, and there could be a few isolated thunderstorms. 73 Saturday, and then temperatures start to fall. 68 Sunday, mostly cloudy, down to 49 Sunday night. And if we look at Saturday, hour by hour, the rain chances already there as you're waking up, but they really ramp up late morning through the afternoon hours. That will be the opportunity for some showers and some of these storms as well. 8 a.m., we've got some rain to our west. It moves in later Saturday morning, but really the bulk of the rain looks like it's likely to arrive midday through the afternoon hours, and it could be heavy at times. So if you do have Saturday plans, make sure that you do have your raincoat with you or your umbrella if you're headed to an event where you can bring an umbrella with you. The good news is right now it looks like the rain would clear out Saturday evening. check in for an update tomorrow, but this may be good news for the NC State Duke game on Saturday. We'll have a small chance of a shower that night, about 20-30%. A lot of us really need this rain. You know, the timing of a Saturday may not be ideal, but the new drought monitor came out today and it shows most of our viewing area abnormally dry. 80 degrees, mostly sunny tomorrow, but the rain chances ramp up after that. It's a cold front swinging through, perhaps some low pressure trying to form along the cold front. Once we get to Sunday, we begin the cool down. You are really going to notice it next week, though. Just 62 the high on Monday, lows back in the mid-40s next week, highs in the 60s, and that sounds like great fair weather if you ask me. I can't wait to be out there in some sweater weather next week.
All right, Kat, thank you.
Let's keep celebrating the opening day of the State Fair, and let's honor it by going back in time a bit to the day WREL transmitted the very first live HD newscast. All right, if you moonwalked a Thriller back in the day, this show is for you.
Did you moonwalk a Thriller back in the day?
I was a little bit little for that, but I do enjoy stumbling through a moonwalk. Yeah.
MJ the Musical is playing at the Durham Performing Arts Center. The show features Michael Jackson at three distinct ages and covers his career from when he performed with the Jackson 5 and when he broke from his family and started his solo career. The show has been described as a concert with a story. You'll get to hear all of his greatest hits. The first show is tonight and continues each night through Friday. It is Throwback Thursday,
Let's
you could say, for us here at WREL.
23 years ago, we transmitted the very first live HD newscast, and everybody's used to that with everything. Everything's HD, but this was the first one from the State Fair. David Crabtree, Pam Salisbury, they anchored the broadcast live from the fairgrounds. The newscast had a little bit of everything, a lot of familiar faces. You can watch the full broadcast on WREL.com. A lot of fun.
It's always good to look back at those.
I love them. I love going back in time a bit. Thanks for joining us tonight here on WREL News.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WREL. Have a great night.
Keep watching WREL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.